You are Locked On Bears, your daily Chicago Bears podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
You are Locked On Bears, and I'm your host, Lauren Cox. You can find my work at NBC Sports Chicago and Bears Wire, part of the USA Today Sports Media Group. And I'm here to bring you your daily Chicago Bears news and analysis. Today, we're going to look at what the Chicago Bears can learn from Super Bowl 53, looking at what made the New England Patriots successful during the season and during the big game, and what made the Rams successful during the season, and what ultimately caused their demise in the championship. But before we turn back to the Super Bowl, another little bit of Bears news snuck out on Monday, and that was a report from the Chicago Tribune and Brad Biggs, who really is the Bears' king of the offseason when it comes to getting these details and the signings and the coaches and you name it. When it's the offseason, Brad Biggs is the Chicago Bears reporter to keep an eye on, and he got a hold of the details of the new contract extension for right tackle Bobby Massie. He, of course, was the first Bears player to sign a deal with the team this offseason that wasn't just their, you know, reserve future contract, a no-name player that they signed just to bring around for 2019. This extension was originally reported as a four-year deal, if I remember correctly, but Brad Biggs is reporting it is a five-year, $40 million contract, which, when you first look at it, you know, 5 years, $40 million, $8 million a year, that would make him the fifth highest paid right tackle when it comes to a per-year average salary. But as you start to get a little bit more deeper into the details of this deal, $15.8 million guaranteed, and the year-to-year breakdown here, it really does come out as a very team-friendly deal, and one I would not be too upset about from the Chicago Bears standpoint, but for what you're paying versus what you're getting and how much you're locked in or not so locked in to this five-year contract. I mean, first of all, at about $16 million guaranteed over 5 years, that's just a little bit more than $3 million a year that you have to pay Bobby Massie. So that right away should tell you that this is a contract that should be fairly easy to get out of early on in the deal, and it's not going to go the full 5 years. And as you look at the details more and more, you see that that is certainly the case. So early on, it's a little bit back-loaded in terms of where the base salary is, but the guaranteed money comes right up front. So first year one, he only has a $3.8 million cap hit, and even that is with a $2.4 million base salary and a $6.5 million signing bonus. In the first year of the contract, he's not taking that much up against your salary cap space in 2019, which is good. It'll give the Bears more space to potentially add more free agents this offseason. They're only working with about, I believe, $10 or $11 million before this deal, so you take another 3.8 out of that, and you're starting to get down below the single digits here, which is going to limit some of what Ryan Pace wants to do this offseason. So $3.8 million in year one for a cap hit is pretty low for a starting caliber right tackle in the NFL. But then you look to year two, you're looking at a $7 million salary and an $8.3 million cap hit, and that base salary is fully guaranteed. So for the most part, he's locked in for that 2020 season there. They have to pay him that $7 million, whether they keep him or cut him at that point. So it just makes more sense. They'd save $1.3 million. You know, it's not really worth it to cut him before 2020. But once you get past that second year of the five-year, $40 million contract, this thing breaks wide open, and it really is true team options from then on out, because his next 3 years of salary are all that full $8 million a year average salary with a $9.3 million cap hit, and none of those salaries, those base salaries, are fully guaranteed. So after 2020, the guaranteed money has been paid out to Bobby Massie, and they can cut him and not have to owe him any dead money on the salary cap. So what this does is it gives Bobby Massie a longer-term deal so that when he plays, if he plays at a high level, he can be paid at that level and remain in Chicago for a number of years. I mean, he is already 29, will turn 30 this upcoming August when preseason starts. So he's not a guy that's going to necessarily stick around until he's, 35 by the time this contract is up, because it gives the Chicago Bears some flexibility here to get out of it even after two seasons, but certainly after three or four. You know, this is a very team-friendly deal from Ryan Pace, someone who we've been able to come accustomed to a lot of these, you know, front-loaded in terms of salary, where nowadays most NFL contracts just end up being a two-year deal with some team options afterwards. This is essentially the $15.8 million guaranteed over the first 2 years. And then everything after that, there's no guaranteed money, so it's a year-to-year decision whether they want to keep or cut Bobby Massie. And we talked earlier when he first signed this contract extension that, you know, he had played arguably his best season of his career in 2018. I think in a contract year, he stepped up and played some of the highest quality football of his career. Unfortunately, that was not a consistent production from him over the first 3 years here in Chicago. But we saw a guy who can consistently stay on the field, who can be that healthy. Sometimes the best ability is availability, and Bobby Massie has certainly brought that. And even though there's been times when it's been frustrating and sometimes when you're feeling pretty good about it, at the very least, the Bears aren't locked in to that long term at right tackle. They could still draft someone here on the third day of the draft, you know, develop them in 2019 and maybe even 2020, because Charles Leno's pretty well locked in on the left side as well. And then you can kind of be looking at year three for that young prospect to potentially step into a starting role at a Bears tackle spot when you're really starting to get a little bit farther down the line. But the contract gives the Bears some flexibility, whether that's a draft pick, whether that's Rashad Coward, the converted defensive lineman who is also set to be, I believe, a restricted free agent. So a decent chance that he's back. But you're going to see Bobby Massie for the next 2 years at the very least. But his contract is not going to limit the Bears from potentially grooming his heir and leave him waiting in the wings. And I mean, the Bears were kind of left waiting in the wings this season outside of the Super Bowl looking in. So I think it's a great opportunity for Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy to take some lessons from the New England Patriots and Los Angeles Rams. So up next, we'll start looking at a few things the Chicago Bears can learn from Super Bowl 53. Keep it locked, right here on Locked On Bears. I hope Locked On Bears is helping you get through the start of this NFL football-less offseason. We're still in the hangover of Super Bowl 53, and so no better opportunity to try and find a few things the Chicago Bears can learn from what we saw from the New England Patriots and the Los Angeles Rams. And I think what this game highlighted, more so than we've seen through a lot of this season, was the importance of winning in the slot. And some of this comes back to really both sides of the ball, but let's start with Super Bowl MVP Julian Edelman. Targeted 11 times, caught 10 passes with one drop for 141 yards, no touchdowns, but certainly the game-changing playmaker in this game and the go-to weapon for Tom Brady and this Patriots offense. And you look at how the Los Angeles Rams tried to defend him, or more so, how the Patriots put him in position to attack the Los Angeles Rams defense. And out of his 10 catches, they came against six different defenders in coverage. And you look more specifically, you have six of his catches for more than 100 yards all came against Rams cornerbacks in coverage. Now, a lot of that was Bill Belichick trying to put him in a position to where he could be all over the field, but some of it was anticipating how the Rams would try and defend someone like Julian Edelman, how they might move their cornerbacks around, and especially as the game went on, tapping into what Wade Phillips wanted to do defensively to then put Julian Edelman in the position to be successful. And it's sort of this one step ahead that you always hear about Bill Belichick, in the sense that, you know, if you listen to the broadcast of the game, you heard early on Tony Romo talk about how Wade Phillips was doing a great job of disguising coverages pre-snap so that Tom Brady wouldn't know whether it was man or zone, so that the cornerbacks might show man by following receivers that are in motion, but would ultimately end up playing zone once the ball is snapped to try and confuse Tom Brady. So what you saw Bill Belichick do is say, okay, if you're going to show man coverage pre-snap and go zone, then we'll motion Julian Edelman into the slot, and you know maybe you'll show man by keeping someone like Aqib Talib or Marcus Peters following around the field. But then once he's in, once they're in zone, you know your outside cornerbacks aren't as used to having to fill into that slot position based on the pre-snap motion. Then all of a sudden your guys aren't in as comfortable of positions to be able to cover Julian Edelman one-on-one without being able to use that sideline to their advantage for their typical coverage reps. So you saw Julian Edelman be able to get a lot of these one-on-one matchups and still do most of his damage in the slot. According to the Pro Football Focus charting, 6 of his catches for 93 yards came out of the slot. I mean, that was the majority of his performance. It ended up being about 2/3 of his routes run in the slot, so they were able to, you know, threaten some things on the outside. But for the most part, Edelman was doing damage in the slot, and the Rams just did not have an answer for him from a coverage standpoint. Clearly a mismatch for linebackers. That's no surprise. But, you know, even Nickell Robey-Coleman had some trouble with him. Marcus Peters had some trouble with him. Aqib Talib had some trouble with him. No one could really cover Julian Edelman. And I think it's lesson number one for the Bears to make sure you have as solid of slot defenders as possible. Whether that's Bryce Callahan, who led the NFL in yards allowed per coverage snap in the slot, per Pro Football Focus is charting. He gave up the fewest yards every single time he stepped on the field. But he's also a guy who's never played a full 16-game season in 4 years in the NFL. This season he got up to 13 before he finally broke his foot against the Los Angeles Rams, of all teams. But year one, 9 games, 2, 11, then 12, 13. 9, 11, 12, 13 hasn't gotten up to that full season of durability, and it is hard to invest a long-term contract in a player that you can't always rely on every Sunday. So even if it's not Bryce Callahan, the Bears absolutely need to make sure that they have a top slot cornerback under contract. I don't think you can get away with relying on Sherrick McManus for a full 16-game season in the slot. He played very well last year, but it's not something he has a proven track record of doing, and especially when it's not Vic Fangio and it's not Ed Donatell. And, you know, as much as we're confident in what Chuck Pagano can do, and there's reasons to be so, it's not going to be exactly the same as last year. So as sure-handed as you can be in that slot position, the better you're going to be. Because even you look at the Los Angeles Rams, Brandon Cooks in the slot, 3 catches, 30 yards. Josh Reynolds, 2 catches, 21 yards. Robert Woods, 4 catches, 63 yards. I mean, that's, again, over 100 of Jared Goff's yards coming at those slot wide receiver positions specifically. It's not even tight ends in the slot. It's just slot wide receivers. That was where the offense really went in this Super Bowl more than anywhere else. Neither team necessarily had a great answer for covering the slot. The Bears seemed to have one this year when Bryce Callahan was on the field, and for the most part when Sherrick McManus was on the field. But either way, that is a key position of need to make sure that the Chicago Bears address effectively, not just try and throw a Band-Aid on there, you know, whether it's, again, Sherrick McManus or a late-round draft pick or a veteran minimum free agent that they bring in to compete there, that it has become the same as a starter on defense with how much you play nickel defense. The Bears can't afford to go cheap and overlook that slot cornerback position again, whether it's Bryce Callahan or somebody else. And you can kind of see on the flip side where the Bears offense would be wise to attack the slot, kind of seeing how both teams struggle to defend it. Most teams struggle to defend it. So there's certainly some advice for the Bears offense there. But I also think there was a bigger picture takeaway and learning opportunity from an offensive standpoint that a guy like Matt Nagy could take away from this game. So still to come, we'll look a little bit at what Bill Belichick and really both coaching staffs were trying to do to help their quarterbacks be in the best position to win the Super Bowl. That's next on Locked On Bears. Personally, when I was watching Super Bowl 53, I saw two offenses trying to do a lot of the same things, and clearly one having more success than the other. And I think the discrepancy between the two didn't necessarily even show up on the scoreboard, but we saw the Patriots have more success moving the ball between the 20s, and even when they weren't finishing drives with points in the first half, at times Tom Brady and the entire Patriots offense was having a lot more success moving the ball, and we saw their offensive output numbers end up showing a little bit more of that discrepancy than the final point total did. But you saw Bill Belichick do a great job of making adjustments through the game and putting his quarterback, even though he's the opposite of young, putting him in the position to lead his team to victory. It wasn't as though Tom Brady necessarily had a phenomenal Super Bowl memory, you know, historic performance. I mean, it was good. 21 of 35, 262 yards, no touchdowns, one interception, a 71.4 passer rating. I mean, it wasn't phenomenal. It wasn't terrible. It was better than what Jared Goff did on the other side. But a lot of that was just finding Julian Edelman, and Rob Gronkowski made a couple of nice throws downfield. But for the most part, Tom Brady wasn't asked to do too much. And certainly that's the objective and is easier said than done. But I think it's important to look at a couple of different ways that Bill Belichick did that. I mean, first of all, you come out, and again, this is kind of what I think the Rams should have wanted to do and were unable to do so, but you come out, the Patriots run the ball in the first four plays of the game and ultimately end up handing it off to Sony Michel 18 times, and when you take away Tom Brady's quote-unquote rushing attempts that don't even end up being actual rushing attempts, they ran the ball 30 times in this game compared to the 35 pass attempts. They were a fairly balanced offensive attack, and they were not afraid to stick to that running game. Because you saw early on, I mean, even after Tom Brady is intercepted on that first pass, that the Rams defense was doing a good job of collapsing the pocket and not really allowing Tom Brady to get too comfortable. And even after the Patriots ran the ball effectively on that first drive, the Rams really stepped it up from a run defense standpoint and were able to stifle a lot of what they wanted to do in the ground game through that first and most of that second quarter as well. And the Patriots went to a little bit more passing at some of those stretches, and Edelman was able to break off a few bigger plays after the catch. But for the most part, it was some short and somewhat intermediate stuff from Tom Brady, and it was trying to run the ball and somewhat struggling to do so. But what you saw in the second half was this Patriots offense get back to more two tight end formations, get the fullback James Devlin on the field a bit more than we had seen in the first half. And what the Patriots were able to do was A, run the ball more effectively, but B, leave some of those extra blockers in pass protection, give Tom Brady a little bit more wiggle room. The time to throw still wasn't super high, but he was able to be efficient with the ball, a little bit more comfortable in the pocket, and have that ability to diagnose a little bit more of what the Rams were doing post-snap, even when what they were doing pre-snap was a little bit more hidden from Tom Brady. You see, James Devlin ended up playing, I think, 30 snaps in this game, which was actually more than Sony Michel played. And the Patriots used the fullback more than most teams in the NFL. And I'm not advocating for the Bears to necessarily switch to a fullback-heavy offense, but you could kind of see just the importance of taking some of that away from Tom Brady, of not having to rely on your passing game, being able to establish the run. And I know that might sound simple, but what I think is the most important and impressive about it was Bill Belichick's adjustments to be able to do so. That the Rams were effectively stopping that in the first half and winning the line of scrimmage. And when Devlin and you know, Gronkowski plays every single snap in the game, and Dwayne Allen gets some extra playing time, they brought in the sixth offensive lineman, Adrian Waddle, was in there as well. And, you know, a healthy dose, a healthy rotation of Michelle, James White, Rex Burkhead, really keeping guys fresh in there and adding some of that bulk into that front for your offense to be able to win back the trenches a little bit more against a really good Rams defensive line. I mean, this was a masterful game plan from Bill Belichick, masterful in-game adjusting as well. And again, making up for what was not a stellar Tom Brady performance. The Patriots did not need Tom Brady to orchestrate these incredible drives. He had a beautiful, beautiful throw to Rob Gronkowski that set up that Sony Michel touchdown. And when you're in the Super Bowl, I mean, you're going to need at least one beautiful throw like that from your quarterback. Don't get me wrong. You can't completely take it out of your quarterback's hands unless you're the 85 Bears or the 2000 Ravens. I mean, even then, you still had to have the quarterback make some plays. But the Patriots were able to, for the most part, let Tom Brady just take care of the ball, get rid of it quickly, keep drives alive, and rely on that running game. And even when he does throw an interception, it doesn't ultimately hurt them because they were in such a good position around their quarterback. And the defense deserves a lot of credit for that, because you look at the other side of the ball and the Los Angeles Rams, it looked to me like they were trying to do some of the same things, that they wanted to get Todd Gurley going. They wanted to take some of that pressure off of Jared Goff, but instead you saw the Patriots make a concerted effort to stop that running game and to put this young quarterback in a position where he had to do all the work. And you saw Sean McVay, from a coaching standpoint, really fail to adjust to that and to find different ways to get the running game going, whether it's adding more outside zone stretch runs to get the defense running horizontally or throwing some quick slants, some screens, some bubbles, little things to keep Aaron Donald and Ndamukong Suh from just attacking upfield on every snap, because you can kind of mix in the downhill runs and be able to attack them in a few different ways. But instead, I think what you saw was McVay try and push Goff a little bit early on, that, you know, when the Rams started stacking together punts, and they weren't all three and outs, but four and outs and five and outs and drives that didn't get past midfield over and over again, I think what you saw was McVay trying to say, okay, well, maybe if we pass here on this down, if we pick up a first down, we'll get some momentum and our offense will kind of get jump started. And he kept kind of coming back to that, and it just never connected. And Goff was never able to get into a rhythm, was never able to kind of shake some of those early struggles and develop that confidence to lead this team to victory. And he didn't have the running game to fall back on, because McVay kind of, I don't want to say he totally abandoned it early on, but he went away from it a little bit to try and use the passing game to jumpstart it. But what that ultimately did was play right into Bill Belichick's hands from a game planning standpoint. He wanted to take the running game away. He wanted to make Goff be the guy that had to beat him. Goff was unable to do so, and McVay seemed more than willing to allow that to happen, to try and have Goff be the guy to beat him. And when you're playing Bill Belichick, you can't play into his hands. So you look from a Bears and a Mitchell Trubisky standpoint, it just, to me, Super Bowl 53 reiterates the importance of taking the pressure off of your young quarterback. Only make him win you the game when he absolutely needs to, but don't make him have to try and win you the game in the second and third quarters and really the beginning of the fourth quarter. The Patriots were able to, you know, stay one step ahead of McVay from a, you know, controlling the trenches, getting the tight ends in there. And I think you've seen Matt Nagy be inclined to get more tight ends in there and to be able to win a little bit better in the trenches. And all it, and as the season went on, you saw more of that reliance on Jordan Howard. And I think late season Bears, you saw Matt Nagy take a lot of the steps that made the Patriots be successful and the steps that the Rams failed to take in the Super Bowl. And at the very least, I think the blueprint has been there. The formula has been executed in 2018 in Chicago for this Bears team to be successful. And it's about stretching it out again over another 16-game season and hitting your field goals in the postseason and extending this to be a legitimate championship run. But of course, that is all a long way away from now, and we still have a whole offseason and preseason and training camp and regular season and all that to get through, and we will be right here with you every step of the way on your favorite daily Chicago Bears podcast. You're definitely going to want to tune in again tomorrow, because I will be joined by former Chicago Bears tight end Evan Rodriguez. He was a fourth-round pick back in 2012 who really flamed out quickly, had a couple of arrests in his first offseason, was released by the Bears, bounced around the NFL, couldn't really stick around, was playing in the Flag Football League, and is now playing in the upcoming Alliance of American Football League for the San Antonio Commanders. And he really has an interesting story of adversity, of trying to be a little bit more humble and kind of come to terms and swallow his pride a little bit and now work really hard to try and get his football career potentially back towards the NFL. I think we're going to have a great conversation about his career and relive some of his early days, that one season with the Chicago Bears, and kind of find out what went wrong back then and what he's been up to since. So make sure you're subscribed to the podcast so you don't miss that or any of our future episodes. We're on every podcast platform imaginable, I promise. And if there's a platform that we're not on, feel free to tweet us at Locked On Bears, or you know, post on our Facebook page, the Locked On Bears Facebook page. It's the best way to keep in touch with me and this show and really stay connected with your fellow Bears fan, because we're going to have lots of Bears news and analysis for you all off season long, and plenty of reasons to bear down.